The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It is Sweet Emotion right here on 710 KNUS, final hour of the show for the final show of the week, first full week of March. Speaking of Sweet Emotion, you're going to hear it in our next caller's voice. He's a VIP guy. We've had him on before. He was on yesterday with Johnny C. It is our friend Dave Koppel from the Independence Institute. He knows some stuff about guns. How are you, Dave?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Hey, now you have been, we talked before about some of the legislation that has dropped, and I know you talked a little bit with John about one in particular bill, the one about allowing the gun industry to be sued out of existence. I do have a couple questions on that, but can you update us? Where are we with the other three bills that have been offered? Any changes to them? Any chance of amending them or slowing their progress? And have we yet gotten a better view of what this semi-automatic gun bill ban is going to be?
On the last question, I haven't gotten anything new, at least. But let's talk about what we know about the bills that have had committee hearings. So the waiting period bill, which would say a three-day minimum wait anywhere in the state to buy a gun, and then localities can add a wait of any length, you know, 10 days, 30 days, 90 days, whatever.
Anything you want, like a year? Could you say a year if you wanted, if you're bolder?
Sure. I mean, that by the statute, could that possibly be unconstitutional? You know, conceivably, but you know, that's all up in the air. So that passed the House State Affairs Committee. One Democrat on the committee voted against it, and that was on Monday. And then yesterday, that was on the floor of the Colorado House for second reading. Bills, and as you know, in Colorado, bills have three readings, in the sense of once when they're introduced, then they, after they pass the committee, they have to basically be passed. You have two separate votes on two separate days on the floor of the legislative chambers. So we've got second reading passage on the House yesterday, so they need to have one more day to pass that, and then it'll cross over to the Senate.
Are you more optimistic about the Senate, by the way, when that bill gets there?
No. No, this is all going to pass. It's under, I think the whole thing's been prearranged with the governor. I don't see any chance of stopping any of these bills that we're currently talking about. The ban on so-called assault weapons, I don't know about, but the other ones are definitely going to pass. So on the Senate side, they had hearings in the State Affairs Committee on Wednesday on three different bills. One is to expand the number of people who can try to seek a red flag gun confiscation order.
This one's crazy.
Against someone.
Crazy.
Which would also include, for example, teachers and lots of other people.
They're the best equipped, Dave. I don't know if you know any teachers, but they actually are the best equipped to identify which of their students should no longer have access to the Second Amendment.
I would say some of them certainly know about students who are exhibiting concerning behavior. So I would be all in favor and of how things should be, which is they should be able to go to a law enforcement officer who could look into the matter himself or herself, and then the law enforcement officer would be the one who would do the red flag petition.
Agreed.
Second thing is to take the Texas thing where you can sue anybody for an abortion, even if you had nothing to do with the abortion, and take that principle and expand that even worse to try to destroy the firearms industry. That also passed the State Affairs Committee on a straight party line vote, and then a bill to raise the age of not only buying guns, but even gun possession of a rifle or a shotgun from 18 to 21. That passed the committee. On all three of those bills are going to be on the Senate floor today for second reading. the testimony on the age discrimination bill really had a lot of strong testimony from outfitters and youth safety instructors and folks like that, explaining how badly written the bill is and how it would just wipe out all kinds of youth safety and youth hunting, you know, which is long, absolutely allowed in Colorado. You can get a hunting license at age 12 to be able to hunt when, under the supervision of an older hunter. So yeah, that bill was recognized to have drastic drafting flaws. So they're going to, my understanding is, do an amendment which is basically strike below the acting clause, and we're going to pop in something entirely new to try to rewrite this and maybe be less severe in destroying the ability of, you know, a law-abiding 19-year-old to possess a rifle.
Dave, when they do the strike below, does it mean it goes back to hearing again for more people to give testimony on, or now that it's made it through there, they can do anything they want to it?
The latter. So in just for the viewers who are don't know all about legislative process, in Colorado, for a bill to become law, our Constitution says you must begin it, the law, by saying, be it enacted by the General Assembly of the state of Colorado. And if you don't say those magic words, even if it passes and the governor signs it, you don't have a valid law. The law doesn't exist. So the enacting clause always comes first. If you have a bill that is a complete disaster in terms of incompetent or malicious drafting, and you just say, okay, we want to throw out the whole text and start over, you have an amendment that says, step one, strike below the enacting clause. In other words, just wipe out everything in the original bill draft, and then the amendment would also say, replace that now eliminated language with the following language. So that's what's going to happen on the gun ban for under 21s.
Listen, that one sounds to me like, even with a strike below, do you think they can draft it in such a way that it would survive constitutional muster? And you would be in a position to know that.
Possibly, yes. And this is a matter on which the courts, the federal courts have split. A bill, laws that were less severe and extremist than what at least the original gun ban for under 21s were. One of those bills was held unconstitutional from California by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals about a year ago, whereas a Florida bill that simply banned 18 to 20-year-olds from buying rifles and shotguns in gun stores. That was just upheld by 2-1 by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday.
Is your sense of this that it sounds like it is, and I think maybe you have sort of tipped your hand at the beginning of this, all of these things are going to end up becoming law, and we are then going to be in a position to only challenge them in court. Is that how you see that? Or do you think that any of these, do they all have the safety clause on them, which means we can't even petition to prevent their inaction?
I actually don't know on that question, on the whether they have a safety clause that prevents people from, like you said, petitioning to have a vote of the people on it.
All of these things becoming law, do you feel confident at all in our ability to at least get an injunction to keep from these things becoming enacted, pending whatever the result of any appellate litigation would be?
I think there's a possibility. I wouldn't, I don't want to oversell things. So, for example, the bill to eliminate the firearms industry by specifically authorizing abusive lawsuits, that's based on a model, it incorporates some ideas from the Texas anti-abortion lawsuits. We've had similar things enacted in New York in 2021, and in New Jersey in 22, the court in New Jersey has put the New Jersey statute under a lawsuit abuse law under a preliminary injunction. But a federal court in New York decided not to, and so Both of those are headed to their respective circuit courts of appeals, the Second Circuit for New York and the Third Circuit for New Jersey.
Can we talk about that lawsuit one? I have tried to wrap my mind around why this is okay. And the thing that I've thought of twofold, one is I had suggested even on social media, like, listen, why aren't we suing the hell out of Ford and Coors for any drunk driving fatality that exists? And the pushback that I've gotten is, hey, they don't enjoy any special protections from lawsuits like the gun makers do. Shouldn't they all be treated the same? What do you think about that?
Well, yes, and so you could say that would be a reason to repeal the 1986 and 2000 Colorado laws that prevent abusive lawsuits directed at the firearms industry. Because, you know, people weren't trying to sue Ford to put it out of business. On the other hand, our ski industry, when there were lawsuits that were threatening to put them out of business, you know, like saying if you're skiing and you jump over a an edge without knowing what's on the other side and you hit a rock, you shouldn't be able to sue the ski resort. The legislature did enact that. So that's kind of a similar thing they did for the ski industry. The liability bill does not simply repeal existing protections for firearms stores that were enacted because of a history of concerted abusive lawsuits against the stores. It goes further and authorizes the abusive suits. So now, if this becomes law, which it will, the firearms industry will be uniquely singled out for liability under specially disadvantageous rules that apply only to that. For example, they eliminate proximate cause.
Right.
You can. Right. Right.
No, talk about that. That's crazy. You're right.
Okay. So proximate cause is, when you sue anybody for a tort, suing in court because they did something negligent or intentional that resulted in a harm, and you sue in court to ask for money damages, for example, you have to show proximate cause, that there's a reasonably close connection between what the defendant supposedly did wrong and the injury that you suffered. And it's always been the law in Colorado, as our Supreme Court has said over and over, that an intervening criminal act breaks the chain of proximate cause.
Right.
So Ford sold a car to a lawful, Ford manufactured a car lawfully, sold it to a retailer in Colorado. The retailer in Colorado sold the car to a individual who lawfully, who got a driver's license and registered the car and paid all the taxes. Then one day a criminal stole the car and used it to run over some people on the street and injure them. If you tried to sue Ford or the retailer for making the car, the court would say you can't do that because there's no proximate cause. The chain of causation from Ford building the car to the criminal running people over in the street, the proximate cause chain is broken by the intervening criminal act of stealing the car and then using it for a crime. But the suit, the bill to eliminate the gun industry specifically says, no, that doesn't count anymore. If a criminal uses a gun, you still have proximate cause. So it turns everything upside down. And likewise, the bill says that when you sue the gun industry, if you win, the firearms store that you're suing, for example, has to pay your attorney's fees. But on the other hand, if you lose by bringing an abusive lawsuit, there's no requirement that the malicious plaintiff has to pay the store that was victimized by an abusive suit.
Now, that language itself was a direct result of Sandy and Lonnie Phillips, whose daughter Jessica Gawi was murdered at the Aurora Theater. And they went and took a very aggressive and ill-advised lawsuit against gun manufacturers and got crushed in court, and appropriately so. And they were forced to pay. I think they're still in debt to the tune of got to be six figures or something from this lawsuit.
It was a little bit over $200,000.
Yeah, a little bit over $200,000. Thanks for knowing that. But honestly, and I know Sandy and Lonnie, and I've known them for a long time, and my heart goes out to them. But that's the way the system should respond to lawsuits like that, where there is no basis to do it and it becomes frivolous and frankly harassing. And you and I both know that this is not a vehicle, as the legislation says, to get justice for anyone. It's to try to sue gun manufacturers out of existence.
Right. And the organization that talked the Phillips into bringing this suit, which plainly had zero chance of success, was the Brady organization, which has been suing, bringing some junk lawsuits and also some meritorious lawsuits against the firearms businesses, since the 1970s. You know, that's their thing, is they exist to sue firearms businesses. They, according to the Phillips, they didn't really inform the Phillips that if you, in Colorado, if you bring an abusive lawsuit like this, you end up having to, you by law have to pay the attorney's fees for the other side. The Phillips say the Brady organization didn't inform them, and the lawyers in the suit were Arnold and Porter, which is a Washington, D.C. Mega
firm.
Corporate firm.
Big firm,
and nobody's ever said that they properly informed the Phillips about this. And so when Judge Mache followed the Colorado law and awarded attorney's fees, you know, he said this was obviously just a publicity stunt with no good faith chance of success. And he said it might be expected that the organizations that incited and really manipulated the Phillips would help them pay that. So that the Brady organization has annual revenues of $41 million. And the Arnold and Porter law firm has annual revenues of over $1 billion. And at Arnold and Porter, the annual average profits per partner is over $1.5 million per partner. And but
they have job
Brady
openings.
And Arnold and Porter. Yeah, Brady and Arnold and Porter. Brady's, oh, no, sorry, we can't afford to help you pay the cost. You know, things are really tight. We only get $40 million a year. And, you know, Arnold and Porter, with $1 billion a year, $1.5 million in annual profits per partner, they also refused, apparently, to help the Phillips with their $200,000 bill that those two organizations had caused by their manipulation and, in my view, unethical abuse of the legal system.
What's so fascinating about this, too, is that's not the song that Sandy and Lonnie sing in front of the legislature to push this. Instead, the answer is, well, just because we had an unscrupulous NGO and an unscrupulous law firm that put us in this position to owe all this money, we should just change the law so it's never an issue again. It's just craziness.
Right. Change the law so that everybody can sue, so that we can basically eliminate gun stores and gun manufacturers by destroying them just through the expenses of litigation, which is what was going on before. That's why the Colorado Reform Bill was enacted. The Brady organization had gotten dozens of lawsuits filed by local governments and by, also by the most, the highly ethical New York Governor Eliot Spitzer and the highly ethical Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Andrew Cuomo. And they were running 36 junk lawsuits simultaneously against handgun manufacturers and driving them out of business. Not by winning the cases, but just by the expenses of litigation. Because if you put all the firearms manufacturers in this country together, you still wouldn't have a single Fortune 500 company. They just don't have the money to pay lawsuit expenses ad infinitum, which is one of the differences between them and, say, Ford or Coors.
That's incredible stuff. Listen, in the last couple minutes that we have here, Dave, what else have you heard, if anything, about at least the timing, if not the substance, of the semi-automatic gun ban bill that is making its way through?
The gun ban has been assigned to the House Judiciary Committee, which I think has a reputation as being a one of the more serious committee. Not all committees are known to be serious and meticulous, but judiciary is, and that's as far as I've heard of it. I have not heard of a hearing date being set on that.
Did you say Senate or House Judiciary?
House. It'll start in the House.
So it's going to make it through the House, but it seems like the Senate, even though we're at near supermajority levels for the Dems, is maybe the last place that we have any hope at all of amending or derailing any kind of a bill. Am I wrong in that?
I just don't want to make predictions on that.
Dave, that's what I count on you
it's
for,
hard
to
say,
make the reckless
but don't be optimistic about any of these bills being stopped. If they are, that's great. But we'll likely be in the courts where there will be a chance of success, but no guarantee.
Thanks for this, man. I appreciate this. When I go back to the red flag expansion bill, I like where your head is in terms of saying, listen, if all of this stuff runs through law enforcement, then you can expand the list of people who can call them to what it exists at now, which is everybody. I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
The part that I don't get is we included immediate household members and the people that you're closest with on the argument that they're the ones that know best. And yet now we've expanded it to really teachers, which in and of itself is crazy in this way. If the Dems get their way and they prohibit anyone under the age of 21 to buying any other kind of firearm, now you're talking about college teachers now have the ability to do this. And you might see them at best, what, 1, 2, 3 times a week over a short period of time, and they're going to be empowered to go dime you out to the courts to say, hey, the essay that this person wrote about guns or whatever is sufficient to give me concern. I mean, that just sounds insane.
Or, you know, I had at the parent-teacher meeting, I had for a ninth grader, I had a big argument with the parent because the parent, you know, we had some disagreement. And so the teacher can retaliate by saying, well, I think he's a danger. You know, obviously there are dangerous people out there, and I'm in favor of disarming them. But it should be based on a law enforcement investigation and not just somebody writing a poison pen letter, which is what the law unfortunately allows.
Well, and there's the other thing too. I just don't know many mental health providers who think they're going to get more candor out of their patients, which is what you want, than if they sit there looking at them like knowing that, hey, if I say the wrong thing, my therapist is going to go to court and try to take away my Second Amendment rights.
Yeah.
I mean, that can't lead to better treatment.
Oh, I've talked to people in families who say exactly that, even under before red flag is, you know, we've got somebody who's in the family who's struggling with mental issues, owns a gun, but doesn't want to go to get treatment for exactly that reason, that they'll scare the psychiatrist, will break confidentiality, and their guns will be taken away.
Dave Kopel from the Independence Institute, man, we're going to continue to call upon you to make some time if you can as these bills continue to progress. Thanks for being our resident expert on this.
Happy to do it, and just got to keep up the fight.
Amen. Hey, have a great weekend. That's Dave Kopel from the Independence Institute. We're going to cut away for a break, but only after I tell you about another expert, and that person is Gay Ribble. Gay Ribble and the Empower Home team are the folks that have figured out over decades how to deal with any economic situation in which you need to sell a home or buy a home, and in many cases, both. You know, we've had Gay in the studio here, and I've met with her a couple different times. She's just a quality human being. And it's not just what's going on in her heart that draws me to Gay. It's the fact that inside her head is the answer to how do I make this less stressful for me and my family. She knows how to do it. The Empower Home team knows how to do it. And it's not just the good things, like they sell for average more than any other realtor out there. And I'm talking $30,000 more. That's real cabbage right there. And they sell your home faster on average than other realtors that are out there. You don't have to continue to go down the Google searches and try to find the right one. You can go word of mouth, but my guess is if you call the Empower Home team at 833-301-SOLD, you're going to be sold, SOLD, on them. They do it all for you in a way that gets you the best outcome on the sale and the best outcome on the purchase on the other end. They even have a website with free information that you should. I'm going to go take a look at this too. EmpowerHomeFreeWorkshops.com. EmpowerHomeFreeWorkshops.com. The number 833-301-SOLD. 833-301-SOLD. That's gayhasthebuyers.com. Gay, G-A-Y-E, hasthebuyers.com. Stick around. We're going to get to your texts, your calls. What do we do about this? Is there any, let me just ask you straight up. Is there any change to the laws involving firearms that you think, one, would be effective and make a difference to this surging gun crime with juveniles and adults, and two, would not run afoul of the Second Amendment? Is there anything like that? If so, what is it? And where are they doing it? George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockman, right back with you here. Sorry for that little delay there. I'm going back and forth on WhatsApp with my daughter on some of this transgender stuff. As you can imagine, we're not of the same mind on this. So I wish I could get her on. We're going to figure this out. Nonetheless, George Brockler here on The George Show, 710 KNUS. I asked the question, and really in the context of this, I think we all agree, and maybe that should start with that. Do we agree that there are a problem? There's problems with gun crimes. I don't want to adopt that ridiculous phrase, gun violence, like somebody who takes their own lives with a handgun is gun violence. We don't do that for anything else. We don't call it drug violence if they overdose, even on purpose. We don't call it asphyxiation violence or knife. We don't call it any of those things. But this is just an attempt to try to add numbers and make it more emotional into an argument about gun violence that's really should be limited to gun crimes, in my opinion. So I believe there's an issue with gun crimes, surging gun crimes in the state and in the country. I think that's a problem, and I think it's a product of the fact that there are so many illegal guns and other guns easily accessible on the streets. But where we differ from those on the left is the solution to that. And the misguided but knee-jerk solution for anyone on the left is, well, the way we keep illegal guns out of the wrong hands is to prevent them and delay them from getting into law-abiding people's hands, which is just utter BS. That's their answer. So they have these things that are offered up that I promise you will not move the needle. Not going to move the needle on suicides, not going to move the needle on violent crime. Nobody is going out. Nobody. Nothing significant is taking place in the 3-day period after someone goes and buys a handgun. I already told you the numbers off of the juveniles that were, and I say juveniles, young adults, 18 to 20 year olds. I told you over a 5-year period based on Arapahoe and Douglas counties, which combined make up about 18%, close to 1 in 5 Coloradans, 18 to 22 year old suicides over a 5-year period. It came down to, on average, one regrettable, tragic suicide per year with a firearm that person purchased, whether it was a handgun or a long rifle. One per year for 1/5 of Colorado. So we're going to change the law to exclude legal gun ownership for 18 to 20 year olds to address something that, and again, if we're at the place where every gun law is good if it saves a single life, then we're all done here. We're all done here. But we don't do that with any other law on the books. Nobody says we should go back to banning marijuana if it will just save one life. And yet we know people drive under the influence of marijuana and kill people and hurt people and hurt themselves. But nobody's saying, hey, if it'll just save one life. So that being the case, we're going to deprive 18 to 20-year-olds of the ability to legally own firearms. Now, they can vote for governor, of course. They can vote for the attorney general and the legislature. They're smart enough to do that. Can't trust them to own firearms. We can trust them to enlist in the military. Can't trust them to own firearms. And so we're going to do that for a handful of people that are in the 18 to 20-year-old group that killed themselves with their own owned firearms. Come on. But the question is this. The question is this. Are there solutions to this? What I'm afraid of is we end up just becoming the party of no. And so the question is, if we recognize there's a problem, and I believe there's a problem, what's the solution to it? I've got a text here from a buddy that says, no need to change the gun laws. We just need actual enforcement against those who break them. I think there's that, too. I also think the idea that the AG has gotten on board with expanding legal gun ownership to a whole host, tens of thousands of convicted felons, some of whom have committed real crimes that are traced to real violence, like automotive vehicle theft and drug dealing. Guy advocated and the governor signed into law a law that says, no, if you get convicted of those things, that's cool. You can go out and buy guns again. What? But 18 to 20-year-olds can't be trusted. Drug dealers and car thieves, convicted. They are. They could be convicted of drug dealing twice, three times. They could be convicted of motor vehicle theft if Denver would ever prosecute them. 100 times wouldn't matter. They can still possess firearms legally. 18 to 20-year-olds cannot. So I asked the question, what would be effective? Here's one. George, the only law that might curb gun violence is similar to driving. Before you can legally own a firearm would be to have a permit for 6 months prior to where you would need to take courses on gun safety, storage, and self-defense and pass a shooting test at an authorized gun range. Would we tolerate that? And listen, I would. I wouldn't go buy a gun if I hadn't done those exact same things, including taking the self-defense course, taking the concealed. I want to take courses like that, and I think people should. But conditioning the exercise of a Second Amendment right or any right upon that is troubling. And I think it matters here because if you open the door to that, can't the state then come in and put any sort of pre-ownership regulation on that? Here's something else. Driving a car, while similar, is not the same. And I was going back and forth with John Ferrugia on this on Twitter. Driving a car is a privilege in the state of Colorado. Consuming alcohol is a privilege. There is nothing in the Constitution that guarantees it. Gun ownership? Boom, baby. It's in the Second Amendment. Something that we don't do is we don't engage in something called prior restraint when it comes to the First Amendment. You cannot, it's very, very difficult for the court to step in and say, George, you may not say this on the radio because. You may not publish this in the newspaper because. Our recourse is at the back end. And we say, if you abuse the First Amendment, well, then there's a course of action. That's what it should be. And that's what it has been with the Second Amendment. You go out and abuse your right to possess a firearm. You go out and violate the Second Amendment by using it for some criminal activity. Then you get held accountable. But this is like prior restraint on gun ownership. Let's go to Nick, see what he thinks about this. Nick, you're on 710 KNUS. What are your thoughts?
I will say that the Democrats are very good in camouflaging their true intent when they pass these laws. They say one thing, but they really want to do something else. And the second thing is, and this is a legal question to you because I'm not an attorney, it would really be nice if we could include in every piece of legislation a sunset law.
Oh, God, you're so right.
And track on a yearly basis the success or failure of those rules and regulations. And in the real world, no matter what kind of business you're in, you're always held accountable by your success and failures. And I'd like to have the same yardstick in legislation. The problem is with a lot of this legislation, there's no sunset. They go on and on and on and on, and there's no accountability.
Nick, first off, one exception that I take is the thing that you get held accountable for your failures. Billy and I continuing to be on air, proof that you sometimes don't. But I love the idea, and I have advocated for this myself in front of the legislature when they were first talking about red flag was, listen, if we're going to go down this road, we've got to sunset this so we can see if it actually makes a difference, if it actually works and where it needs to be fit. I feel the same way about the criminal code. I mean, even laws like the way we define and prosecute murders and rapes and robberies and traffic and drugs, even those things ought to on a periodic basis come back up for review so that the current population can get their fingerprints all over it and say, this is what's important to us. This is what we think this crime is worth. And it's the same thing on these gun things. We should pass them and say, hey, in 12 months, we're going to take a look. Nick, I think it's a wonderful idea. I think that could really work.
Now, can that somehow be integrated on all legislation, or is it a big deal?
That's so interesting. I think you would have to amend the Constitution of the state of Colorado to say that all legislation will have a naturally occurring expiration date of whatever. A sunsetting provision. I think you could put that in the Constitution. I just don't know if people would go for it. I think the instant reaction by some would be, it's insanity. All of our laws are going to go away. And it's like, no, they're not going to go away because a responsible legislature is going to sit around and debate, what is the value of child sex assault to us? What is the value of these drug laws? What have we seen with car theft? They're going to do that. Instead, we wait for a crisis level event or even some ridiculous anecdote to bring us to the table and start having these conversations. And you're right, man. And Nick, it also leads to this incrementalism. Do you know what I'm talking about? The window?
It gets absolutely. It's like they get one foot in the door and they get another foot and another foot and another foot.
100%. Nick, thank you for that phone call, man. That was a really smart thought on what we should do with these laws. But I think we should expand it to all of them. I mean, what is that one law that we've said, hey, it's perfect the way it is. We should never change it unless we come to the table to talk. I don't think there's anything quite like that, not that I'm aware of. We ought to be sunsetting these things and giving the legislature enough runway to come back and revisit this on a regular basis. But we just don't do it. Listen, I got to cut away for one last break, and I promise we're going to get to the callers at 303-696-1971. Interestingly, we're talking about guns. Guess what's going on this weekend? Yep, folks, it is the Walt Disney World, I think, of guns, and that's the Tanner Gun Show. It's going to be at the Crown Plaza. You're going to get the best selection and best access to home protection options that are available out there. They have all the hard-to-find stuff, whether it's the guns, the knives, the ammo, the AR accessories, hunting supplies. Here's something cool. Concealed carry classes, just like we were talking about with the texter. There's over 600 vendor tables, and prices, you get them there at Tanner, about 30% off, 30% less than the big box stores. Here are the deets. Now, you can go to TannerGunShow.com, but I would say this. Just go out there, man. Tanner Gun Show is today. Starts today, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Great way to kick off the weekend in advance of spring break. Saturday, that's tomorrow, from 9 to 5, and Sunday from 10 to 4. If you buy a ticket for today, it's good for all 3 days. You can go check something out, go home, see if you can do a better deal somewhere else, realize you can't, then come back to Tanner and pick it up the next day. Tickets are available online at TannerGunShow.com. You can always get them at the door on the day of the event. And remember, parking at the Crown Plaza is always free. That's the Tanner Gun Show. When we cut away for a break, we're going to come back to Frank and everyone else at 303-696-1971. George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. It's George Brockler, 710 KNUS, right back with you for the final segment. A solicited shout out, but a genuine one nonetheless, to Nancy, the CPA, wherever you are. Keep crunching those numbers and try to help those clients find the best way to give the lease to the man. I'm in that boat myself right now. My thanks to Dave Koppel earlier in the hour. I want to get to a couple texts. First thing I have to do, though, is to tell you about a guy named Mitch Floria, who has a business called The Art of Granite, granite with a T. It's theartofgranite.com. I don't want you to be fooled by the title. It's not really just granite he works with. He works with every hard substance that can be made into a kitchen or bathroom counter that you can conceive of in your head. Guy does marble. He does quartz. He does the man-mades, the god-mades. You got an idea? Go to Mitch. Now, Mitch is also a guy who's a big fan of 710 KNUS, and the way that he shows you that love is if you mention when you go out and see him at about the corner of 6th Avenue and Colfax at his showroom out there, when you mention, hey, 710 is what got me here, that George guy told me about you, he gives you some deals. Some of those deals include you get the kitchen sink for free. Guy throws in the kitchen sink for free with the kitchen countertop or the bathroom sink with your bathroom package. That's how much he wants your business, and that's how much he'll stand behind it, too. Everything we've heard about this guy has been nothing but the customer service is top shelf. And I love this guy, man. Going to talk to this guy, you come out feeling, I don't know, a certain sense of enthusiasm about America. Really intoxicating. Give this guy a look. You can go to theartofgranite.com. I, of course, want you to go out and see him in person, because I think once you do that, then it's all over but the hooting and hollering. But the other thing you can do is dial the phone in his pocket, 303-386-5919, 303-386-5919. Let's go right to the phone lines. Frank, you're on 710. What do you think?
You know, three reasons to like George Brockler.
Oh, that's nice.
Number one, I think you're an honest broker. You try to put forth your beliefs, and you hadn't been bought off yet, as far as we know. number two, you like guns. Number three, I think you try to pull the people for their feelings out there. And obviously, there's nothing like a bunch of drunk, you know, on power, left-leaning politicians down there who have all three houses to try to bring out their wet dreams to limit people's constitutional rights. I think the only thing we have at a time like this when they're doing stuff like this is to put up more hurdles in front of them So I think we need a ballot initiative to state in fairly specific words that any laws brought forth by the legislature for any potentially political reason or motivation should have to pass a vote of the people to move forward. Not necessarily have to be slowed down by lawsuits, but just not even be able to be put on the books until this vote of the people. I think they're afraid of that because I think the general will of the people is to be safe, and guns are just one tool to be safe.
What can we do? Is there a specific thing you could say, this specific thing might make a difference in terms of any sort of legislation?
I think, yeah, I don't know how to do ballot initiatives and all that, but I think my understanding is you just get 100 or 250,000 signatures or whatever it is, you know, to put forth a ballot initiative, but it needs to be worded by a countering group, a right-wing conservative-type group, and I hate to have to use that terminology, but it's basically a constitutional group to look out for your basic rights that these people keep trying to infringe upon. I mean, they try every little CS kind of way to do this through local government from Bloomberg and Soros and whatever. But we have to stand on our rights, which has already been adjudicated by Heller et al. And Scalia and other things. I mean, it's aggravating, so we have to put up hurdles for these people to jump.
I agree with you. I worry so much about the makeup of the state legislature and all the state officers so far that we're in a position to only be mere witnesses to the tragedy that is the further erosion of these Second Amendment rights. And I don't know, short of that sunsetting thing, which the Dems would never put into law.
I worry about their bad decision making.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And the consequences of it. It seems like their only answer is to infringe upon law-abiding citizens' rights. That's it.
Whoever's powering them, and it's money-driven by their keep them in office, they come up with their own political bad judgment, and they try to force it on the people who are kind of unaware. You help to make us more aware with the people and the guests that you bring on.
I think, too, you know, and Billy reminded me of this, Dems would say we're up to no good and we make all the wrong decisions and bad policy decisions.
No, we're
too.
Trying to maintain a status quo.
That's and they would say the status quo isn't working. What
right,
I don't think they appreciate is the way to fix the status quo isn't to chisel away at law-abiding citizens' rights. It's to try to address the people who violate rights and hold those criminals accountable. Frank, I got to let you go. I hope you have a great weekend, my man. Great listener. Thanks for the phone call. Listen, we're out of time. Listen, I'd love to get to all the texts. There's people here who guy's a 44-year police officer, says he's troubled by the red flag investigations teams or assignments. Other folks saying, what's an illegal gun? I'd love to get to all this stuff, but we're out of time. Maybe we can pick it up again on Monday. I'll be back on Monday doing the show remotely from here, there, and everywhere after that, except for Thursday. Thanks to Billy Behind the Glass, all the callers, all the guests. You can hear him on the podcast. Stick around. George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.